welcome to the Forecast F1 podcast, coming off the heels of once again another exhilarating race, this time in Monaco, and seeing a first-time winner for Monaco in their home race, Charles Leclerc. Anton, how are you doing?
I'm doing great, and it's great to have you back on the podcast, Sam. And well, as we finished previous podcast episode with playing the national anthem of Chile for David winning the quiz against me, I think we ought to end this one with the national anthem from Monaco.
We definitely should. I think that it would be, I really enjoyed that ending part of the last podcast. I, of course, wish I was there, but I did have a wonderful time experiencing the F1 experience in Toronto, and we can talk a little bit about that later, of course, but I think it would be fitting to have a little bit of a sign-off with that anthem.
Yeah, it was a special weekend in a sense. I guess Monaco always has a different feel to it compared to some of the other tracks on the calendar. But yeah, I think we got to start with talking about, well, perhaps not even qualifying, which was the big day, of course. But practice sessions on the Friday and the Saturday were already building up to, well, I guess a little bit of a difficult weekend, what it was for Red Bull, similar to what we saw actually last week. But where last week Verstappen was able to recover, this weekend was even tougher for Red Bull. And I think, as we are well aware, the Monaco Grand Prix, basically the most exhilarating part is a Saturday. So so why don't we talk a little bit about that? Sam, how did you... I think you were actually at the F1 experience while the qualifying was going on, wasn't you?
I was, yeah, that's right. So I missed qualifying live, and that doesn't happen too often. But in this case, it was something that was a rare opportunity that I was able to go see. However, going into qualifying, first of all, what an exciting period. I mean, as we know, when it comes to Monaco on that track, qualifying really lays the foundation for the likelihood of where a lot of drivers are going to finish during the race. And as we know, pole is paramount. But we saw Leclerc capture pole yet again in Monaco, however, with a different outcome, of course, than he has had in the previous times that he secured pole. But I think there were a lot of really interesting things that we can unpack from qualifying. Let's start, first of all, you touched on Red Bull. Perez with his early exit out in Q3, that was something that was a little surprising, wasn't it?
Definitely. He not only, well, he set three mediocre laps on that first Q1 session. His first lap wasn't good, second one wasn't great either, and then on the last one he wasn't even able to make any improvement, and that was disappointing. He didn't make it into Q3 last weekend either, and again doesn't on a track which is a street track where he's supposed to be feeling quite in his rhythm. Although last year, of course, we saw him crash on qualifying day as well. So, a bit of a tough day for him. Not only for him, Alonso as well didn't make it into Q2. I think those were the main two shockers from that first session. And going into Q2, we saw a couple of interesting things. First of all, two Alpines making it into Q2 was interesting. And then them battling and Gasly just slightly edging it into Q3 and thereby eliminating Ocon. That would not be the last battle that they would have this weekend. Other than that, I think, of course, Perez and Alonso being out, that left a little bit of room for some others to jump into those gaps. And Albon and Tsunoda happily used that opportunity. Tsunoda again making it into Q3. I think it's it's fair to say that he's been having a great season so far. The V-Carb is not the fastest car on the grid, but he's been taking the maximum out of it, and also consistently beating Ricardo in the qualifiers. I think the only time when really Ricardo, of course, he had a good sprint race this season, but other than that, Yuki's been he's in such a great form. And it was great to see Albon making it into Q3. And not only that, in the Q3 session when he set, he finished in the end at a P9, but when he set that time, that was a P7, and you could just hear his jubilation over the radio. That was great to hear. Williams been having a difficult season, so for them to make it into Q3, especially at a track where we know how important, like you were saying, you know, in the end, if you look at it, the order of qualifying in the end, even though the Sunday was in some way eventful, mostly on the first lap, but it's interesting to see that the first 10 positions as how the drivers finished on qualifying is also how they finished in the race. So a great day for Williams or for Albon to stick it into Q3.
Yeah, absolutely. And I would also say one thing is that you touched on Yuki and his consistency, and I completely agree. I think that he is one of the most consistent drivers to date as of this year. Another element of consistency to echo that for qualifying would have been the McLarens as well. We're seeing Norris and Piastri yet again in Q2 with fast times, Lando having the fastest time in Q2 and then Piastri having the third fastest time. So again, I mean, the speed of the McLarens at this point after the most recent upgrades is really a sight to see, and it also makes it even more exciting and continues to add more depth when it comes to the competition of a race itself.
Yeah.
I guess we can get into Q3.
Yeah, Q3. That was
the most exciting part of qualifying.
Yeah, it always is. And I remember how that was last year. It was very exhilarating. So I was building up to it again this year. And not only last year, of course, the year before. Yeah, it's just this session that you really work in towards, and you're really at the edge of your seat. And I think it delivered to the most part. On the one hand, in some sort of a way, I was also slightly disappointed with Verstappen slightly touching the wall. It would have been nice to see actually on a, let's say, on his top qualifying lap, to see where he would have been placed, because I have strong doubts that he would have beaten Leclerc, who himself got, I don't know whether it was, I suppose when you're at that moment, you start to think about everything that can go wrong. Leclerc went over the radio saying that he felt that something moved in the pedals or in between the pedals, which I guess was a bit nerve-wracking for most Ferrari fans or for most Leclerc fans. But he did manage to set the 250th pole actually for Ferrari. So great place to do that.
Yeah, I think you're right when you mention the fact of Max even being able to beat Leclerc. If he hadn't have hit the wall, I agree with you. I think it would have been Leclerc just was on another level when it came to that qualifying lap. And I was a little surprised. We don't ordinarily see that happen with Max hitting a wall or anything like that. He's usually pretty clean. I know he had mentioned the fact that he felt like the car was very slippery, but it is a situation right now. It's a conversation to be had. The unreliability that we're seeing a little bit of coming out of Red Bull. I mean, they are still the top team, but to have car issues, to have just certain elements, Perez being knocked out so early, we're not used to seeing that recently with Red Bull. However, again, it opened up the gates to see other drivers potentially secure a good spot. And Piastri was another one. We touched on Leclerc, but also highlighting the fact that Piastri was just, again, in his element and managing to secure second. And that set up a really interesting front end front lineup for the race going into Sunday.
Yeah, Ferrari McLaren. That was a great result for both. And before we actually get into the race, I think it's worthwhile also to mention that both Haas cars were disqualified from the qualifying, so they had to start. They didn't have any qualifying time, so they had to start P19 and P20 because they had two large DRS gaps. So they had an illegal DRS flap, basically. Shame for them. Wouldn't have been the the only disappointment this weekend. But yeah, let's. Well, I guess
talking
about it, let's get into it.
On your end. That was a subtle laugh.
Yeah, there was a lot of unfortunate things for Perez and for the Haas, and I guess
for a few drivers, for Alpine as well. I mean, we're seeing, like, when it comes to Alpine, the driver dynamic, I remember we discussed this at the very beginning of the season and doing a overview looking ahead. We had talked about the fact that we felt like the driver pairing between Gasly and Ocon was going to be really interesting to see how it evolves throughout this duration of the season, because there's no doubt going into 2024 that there was a considerable amount of question marks and issues that Alpine had, but also that driver pairing. I think that they're two drivers that clearly are highly competitive but also have a history, and when you throw that into a pressured situation, it's inevitable that things are going to get a little heated, so to speak. So we've seen that translate onto the track a few times, one being most recently and then of course this weekend. So yeah, I guess actually, let's talk about lap one, because there's a lot to talk about. I mean, the most exciting things came out of the first lap that wasn't even completed, to be fair. And Tom, why don't you start first? What was one of the first things that you would touch on when it came to some of the collisions we saw?
Well, back on what you were just saying about Ocon and Gasly, I remember that on our very, very first episode of the podcast, this is one of the things that we talked about prior to the start of the 23 season, that it was very difficult to pick which would be the top driver in that team. And that hasn't been confirmed yet. But if you look at it now, after today's race, they both have 1 point, which doesn't split them, and that actually gets Alpine 2 points, which with Albon's finish, Williams now also have 2 points. So there's a lot of ties in there. But back on that first lap, very interesting. I think at the start, it was Piastri having to, not defend, but basically try to keep Sainz at bay, and the cars touched there. It was like the minuscule touch. And but we'd already seen earlier this weekend it can be the slightest of touches that can in one of the practice sessions, Bottas blocked his right front by just slightly scratching the wall. So that got Sainz a puncture on his left front wheel. It didn't, you saw going up to the casino, it didn't turn anymore, and he had to he basically stopped on the fourth corner, and that looked like it was a race over for Sainz. I guess he was to some extent lucky with what happened behind him, where we saw the crash of Magnussen and Perez, which also took Hülkenberg out of the race just by a very slight margin. Actually, he was almost able to avoid crashing there, but Magnussen and Perez. It's hard to say. I think on the one hand, I think that Perez just going up that hill, his acceleration was quite slow, and that sort of left the possibility for Magnussen just to put it in there. There was a bit of space, so I guess if they would have had the same acceleration, then nothing would have really happened. But Magnussen was able to pull his front wing in between the barrier and Perez, and then Perez moved to the right. I mean, if you look at the onboard from Hülkenberg, who was behind the two of them, you could see that Perez actually moved quite a bit from the left side of the track to the right side of the track. Not really leaving much space for Magnussen. Perhaps also not being fully aware that where Magnussen was, maybe focusing too much actually on Hülkenberg, who actually started behind him. I don't know. It was a bit of a coming together, and unfortunate. I mean, it all happens in a split second, obviously, so it's also hard to really pinpoint it to being the fault of one driver. But it was quite an extreme crash in that sense, that with the first shot of looking at it, I only saw the two Haas cars there crashed. I didn't even realize that was actually a shot, like looking back at the track, and then on the left side there was Perez's car. I didn't even see it at first, that it was that damaged. So quite the incident, and and that led us to a red flag and a restart of the race, and Sainz being reinstated on that P3 position. And while all of that was going on, at the front, you saw that actually Piastri on that first start was very, he wasn't quick off the line, but then he managed to hold on to Leclerc in going into the tunnel. But then right behind him, you had Ocon overtaking Gasly there in a way that, well, it was quite, I don't know, the idea of the overtake wasn't bad, but he just didn't leave any space for Gasly there. So he couldn't really do much about touching Ocon. And I do feel for Gasly at that point. You know, you're afraid your car is going to be damaged by your teammate overtaking you in a place where, yeah, it's quite, I mean, anywhere on the track in Monaco, of course, it's hard to overtake. But this was, yeah, this was quite a bold move. And then, yeah, that could have definitely risked points for both of the drivers, because what we saw in the end, that Ocon couldn't even make it to the restart. So yeah, a very eventful lap one. Did I summarize it correct, more or less, Sam, or am I missing out on things?
No, I think you did a great job. I mean, you've hit all the important nails on the head, so to speak. I think that I have kind of the same opinion as well when it comes to the Perez and Magnussen situation. I think that both drivers were doing a few things that led to the outcome, and of course Hülkenberg was just he just unfortunately caught the back end of what took place and was out altogether for Haas, and a really unfortunate weekend for them and a costly one again. For Perez, I mean, that car was that could have been a lot worse. That was clearly a pretty damaging accident. However, I do think that, like you had touched on, you could see that he was looking in his mirrors and focusing on Hülkenberg on the onboard, and he did take a considerable amount of space to move over to the right, which was a little unusual given the fact that the next turn was actually a left hand, was on the left. So had he have just stayed primarily in the center, he probably would have been fine, because even if Magnussen had tried to advance on him, he wasn't really going to have a lot of space to get anywhere. However, like you had also mentioned, again, it is a split second of time, and you know, Magnussen's trying to find as much room as possible, which also is a little bit of a bold move considering he's coming off the backs of facing the potential, he's at risk at this point for a race ban given all the penalties that he's had recently. However, he is a Formula One driver. This is what we do. This is what they do. They make bold moves. And Piastri, I would just elaborate that start there on the first lap before everything fell at the wayside, so to speak. I felt like the attempt that he tried to do with Sainz, where he held Sainz, and unfortunately, yes, Sainz had that puncture, but I thought it was a very bold move from Piastri as well to just keep at it, and and just be able to find that little margin of space to advance and have the confidence in his in where he was at that moment in time. I thought it was also interesting to see Piastri starting in this position and really almost like a cat and mouse game, so to speak, against him and Leclerc, because he really was applying the pressure in the beginning, and I really enjoyed seeing that, because this is a situation where one of the first times you're really able to see Piastri in that position where he is able to battle and really apply the pressure from that point of view, forcing Leclerc into more of a defensive position. But it was nice to see until everything obviously ceased. And yeah, the Alpine situation is just an unfortunate one. It really leaves you scratching your head a little bit when it comes to Ocon, why he would make that move. I mean, I can understand trying to take any opportunity to advance, but I just felt like from an overall team and risk ratio, it was just way too risky. That left more of an opportunity for it to be detrimental to the team and to himself, as opposed to really just seeking a way to get ahead of Gasly. But being Gasly, yeah, I would be unfortunately disappointed, because for him, this was his best qualifying to date for 2024. Mind you, he did still manage to earn a point at the end of the race, but he could have, I mean, could that have shaped his race as a result of Ocon colliding with him? Yeah, very well could have. So a lot of things to unpack in that first lap. But after that, there was the restart. And like you said, I guess we can segue into that Sainz was able to recover his position. That was something that was left on the table, but he was able to maintain that. And then we went from there. So what are your takes from the race after the restart?
Yeah, that restart was relatively clean compared to the first start. And I think for the remainder of the race, I think well, at least for me, the three main focus points were the gaps between Norris and Russell, the gap between Hamilton and Tsunoda, and Alonso basically holding off to create a gap for Stroll to make a free pit stop. I think those were the things that that caught my attention most. Norris, he was in one moment in the race, he actually got into a 20-second gap with Russell and could have made the pit stop, but that was just also the same moment when Sainz was trying to hold up Norris in order to not have that gap be 20 seconds. And because of holding off, Norris felt that actually he could perhaps overtake Sainz on track. So the only little gap that he had, he didn't pit, so he never went for new tires. And in general, I think, you know, on the one hand, a lot of spectacle on that first lap, but because of it, everybody was basically able to fit on another tire other than the tire that they started on. So basically, it also eliminated a big part of the strategy on this race, which is basically, you know, that one pit stop that everyone's got to do is usually the big focal point in Monaco, but that was slightly eliminated. It was interesting to see that Hamilton, who had well, at some point he had more than a lap gap to Tsunoda, he had a free pit stop opportunity, which he did take at the end. But because of it, Verstappen did the same thing, and basically Mercedes that way jeopardized Russell's race. Who in the end did manage to finish fifth, but if you would have asked me 10 laps before the end, or I don't know exactly in which lap Verstappen made his pit stop, but he was gaining on Russell 2 seconds a lap at one point, so I definitely thought that Verstappen would have made a move, but in the end, either Russell managed to keep that gap about 1 second, or perhaps Verstappen didn't want to risk his 8 points for P6. Either way, that was interesting to look at, and then, like I said, the Aston Martins with Alonso in 12th, creating a gap for Stroll in 11th to pit to perhaps attack Gasly afterwards. But then, Stroll had a little error and enjoyed the puncture and had to pit for softs, and actually he overtook quite a lot of cars. Bottas, Sargent, I thought at one point he might actually even, you know, overtake, or Alonso would overtake him and let him attack Gasly again. The race wasn't long enough for that. And like we were saying, Gasly fortunately scored that 1 point for Alpine, doubling their amount of points. So I think in the end, with the three main focal points that I'm talking about, there were a lot of could-bes that didn't really finalize, but that still made it very interesting to watch the race. At least I enjoyed myself. I thought it was a decent race to watch, even if the top 10 was finished exactly as how they started. So in that sense, not a lot of I guess the person who was really happy with it finishing this way was Leclerc. His last win came in Austria in 2022, which has been a while. And you've seen Sainz in the meantime win at Singapore last year and Japan this year. So it must have felt like a relief, obviously not just because of winning his home race. He's always had a difficult, or he's always been unfortunate here. Is it the third or the second time he's gotten pole? I think it's the third time he's gotten pole, right? So in 21 was when he wasn't able to start the race, and then in 22 that was the qualifying session where Perez crashed in front of the tunnel, and in the end Leclerc started on pole, but Perez himself won the race. And then third time's a charm, it seems.
Absolutely. And I mean, what a poetic moment, to be honest, to be able to win that race in your home, but with historically throughout his life and also with his family being having such an important role in where he is to date, I think that overall it was a win that, similarly to seeing Lando win, how can you not be happy? It doesn't matter if you support a different team or a driver or just overall love the sport. You have to walk away with just being happy that Leclerc was able to win that race. So I thought it was a really special moment, and it was a really great way to end the race weekend in Monaco and head to Canada in 2 weeks, because, you know, I get to actually watch it, and I'm very excited live, and I'm very excited, especially off the backs of the most recent races. So all in all, it was great. I think that when he was on the podium, and to see him up there also with Piastri securing, and then Sainz once again managing to get on the podium as well, it was a really, like I said, it was a really special moment. Very much a special moment. So
yeah, I couldn't agree more. All right, so let's get into this weekend scores for the Forecast F1 game, which is going to be interesting because, again, an unexpected winner. Or was it really unexpected after all? Or we're gonna look at that later on in the quiz. We had 763 people playing the game with a average score of 33.0. So that's not quite high. I guess that already, well, we'll get
answers
to that.
That question in yeah. Some respects.
The lowest score this weekend was 6.1. I usually don't mention any names, but it was my cousin Friso. But he actually is the only person to have finished in the top 20 for the full season, two seasons in a row. So for the 22 and the 23 season. But today he had the lowest score out of everyone. Sam, how many people do you think correctly predicted a podium with Leclerc, Piastri, Sainz?
Oh boy. I'm going to say one person.
Nice. It's one person.
I think I may know this one person.
No, I don't think you do.
I don't?
No.
Oh, shoot. Because I do know one person in particular who was telling me yesterday about the podium that they had chosen, and Leclerc was the winner, and I believe Piastri and Sainz were on the podium as well. So maybe it was just a little bit of a switch.
Yeah, that's almost right. Ajit did have the first two places correct. He did went with Leclerc 1 and Piastri 2, but he had Hamilton on 3 and then Norris on 4. So actually did score okay. The points for 1, 2 and 4. He had Verstappen on 5. Anyway, Ajit still finished 5th. So good score for him.
Very good result. Yeah.
Yeah, that's by
best
far
best result he's ever had.
Yeah, exactly. actually, Nancy, who we also went with to the Canadian Grand Prix, she finished 6th, just behind Ajit. So good score for her too. But yeah,
very
so
nice.
The three people on the podium this weekend were Alessandro Paglia from Italy with 68 points, finishes P3. Then Panos Karadimos from Greece scored 70.3 points. Got a P2 with that. And then the winner of this weekend is the person that got the podium right. That was Tim Collins from Austria. And with that, he scores 77.3 points. And actually, it's interesting. That's the fourth Austrian week winner that we have in Forecast F1.
Wow.
After Robert Hutter, who's actually already won two weekends. He won the Mexican and the Miami Grand Prix for Forecast last year. Ayan Bayazit won Silverstone last year, and then we had Leonid Tushek, who won one of the first public Forecast F1 races, which was Spa 22. So the fourth Austrian week winner, and the only person to get a complete correct podium this weekend. I think I think that deserves an applause, because honestly, getting this podium right, well, I would have never gotten it right. That's one thing that's for certain.
You and me both.
And actually, the winner of last weekend's race, Jan-Marc Drucke, he again finishes in the top 10. He finishes P9, so that actually gets him into the top 10 in the standings as well. But let's look a little bit at those standings then. We see that actually Matthew Berger, coming in from P3, is now again on P1 because he scored 48 points. That means that the P1 position is now at 505.3 points. And on P2, we have Julia Drucker, who drops one position, scoring 41 points this weekend. And then on P3, we have a newcomer, Joseph Morgan from the UK. He's coming in from P8, which is a position that he shared with me last weekend. But Joseph moved himself up. I moved myself down. I think looking at our scores, let's look at your score first, Sam. Do you remember what podium you went with?
Well, I can tell you with confidence that the only driver that managed to be on the podium that I chose was Leclerc, and I chose him for P2, I believe.
Yeah,
I think
right.
I went with Verstappen, Leclerc, and then Perez. So.
Yeah, that's right. You went with Verstappen, Leclerc, Perez. I actually went with the same two, P1 and P2, and then I had Norris on P3. I moved Perez down a bit this week, and I had him on 7th. But that means that you finish on P477, and I finish on P416. Ouch again. which means I'm moving down from P8 to P13, and you are moving down from P169 to P187. So both of us, we dropped a bit this weekend.
We certainly did. This was not our finest weekend. However, hopefully we can bounce back in Canada.
Yeah, but it's interesting because now we finally get to see a little bit of a mix-up, and then people who dare to take risks. Or who dared to take risks this weekend, actually, with putting Leclerc P1, scored a lot of points, and it was a decent amount. So we have we see a bit of a switch in the scores. So look yourself up in the app and see where you're ranked right now. If you go to results, you'll see your weekend score. But if you go to standings, you'll see where you are in the standings. And I think it's gonna get very interesting now that it seems as if both the Ferraris and McLarens are moving close to the Red Bulls. Although perhaps it's slightly track specific, but it's gonna make it interesting predicting into like you said, the next race is Canada. So I'm very interested to see who will still go with Verstappen P1.
I think it's going to diversify the percentage of people that are picking Verstappen in P1 moving forward, because obviously a lot of, like you've mentioned, the gap in terms, and we're looking at the last three races. Who would have thought that within the last three races it would actually be two different drivers as opposed to Verstappen? And so I think that really speaks for itself when it comes to the game, and it makes it a lot more exciting, because if you're somebody who wants to, like you mentioned, make a bold prediction, you may not be wrong, and this weekend was a very clear indicator of that.
Well, then tell me, how many people do you think predicted P1 Leclerc? I want to hear from you now.
Okay, well, we know that there was one person that had the correct podium. We know of one other person who did have Leclerc, but I'm going to say 12 people in total.
Okay, well, I'm just going off the amount of people that, well, so last week what we, I played the quiz against David, and we had a FP1 and FP2 session where Red Bull was struggling, and we were guessing, I think David went with, we had about the same amount of people playing the game, I think it was 740 something, and he went with 500 people getting P1 for stop and correct, I went with 501, but it ended up only being 446, so that was after Red Bull had a tough time and struggled in FP1 and FP2. Then, of course, you had to make your predictions prior to FP3, and then they recovered in FP3. But this weekend we saw a similar tendency of the Red Bull struggling. And I'm thinking quite a lot of people must have gone with, Leclerc was really, really good in that, especially in FP2. So I think there must have been decent amount of people. Well, I would say I was going to guess around 100, 120. But if you're going to go with 12, I'm going to go with 13 just to make that point of view. Sorry, Sam.
Okay, that's fair. So then we move on to P2 then, which is Piastri. And that's your pick.
Yeah, I'm going to go. I don't think it will be that many people. I'm going to go with 30 people.
Okay. I'm going to go below you, and I'm going to go with the same strategy as you have in mind and say 29.
All right. That's going to be an interesting one. I'm very curious to see how many people went with that. Actually, I think that, yeah, most of the people who would have gone with that Leclerc win probably going to go with the Verstappen P2. Anyway, Verstappen is much further down the line. We're at P3 Sainz, and I want to hear it from you.
I'm going to go with 42.
Nice. I had written down 45. I'm going to go with, I'm going to go with 43 then. I'm continuing to play the tactical game.
Okay.
Which moves us to Norris in P4. I'm going to go with 80.
Yeah, I think that's a safe bet, but I'm going to do just, actually, you know what? No, I'm wavering here. I'm going to go less than you. Let's do 79.
All right, 79 it is. Russell in P5.
I'm going to go with 27.
I think it must have been much more than that. I'm going to go with 28 then.
Okay.
Then it brings us to the first Red Bull and the only Red Bull in the top 10. Verstappen. Okay, that's an interesting one. We had Perez finishing last time around at P8. And I was guessing there was only two people who had that right, but in the end it was 21, which makes me a little bit afraid of going low with this one too. But I think it cannot have been a lot of people. The only one that I know that had Verstappen, I think, didn't we just say that Ajit had Verstappen? Yeah, he had him on P5. Well, anyway, I'm going to say there's going to have been only two people that went with Verstappen on P6.
Okay. I'm thinking about it. Since you went with two, I mean, that either leaves me with only one person or above you. So let's go with three.
All right. I'm very curious to see that one too. All right. That brings us to the second Mercedes, Hamilton on P8. Sorry, P7.
P7, I think this was a safe bet, to be honest, given the recent results with Hamilton. So I'm going to say that a lot of people probably chose that. And let's go, well, I mean, depending on what you define as a lot. So I'm going to go in the 50s and say 57.
Oh, I think it must have been.
I mean, maybe it's not a lot in comparison to over 700 playing the game, but.
In my indicator, I've wrote down numbers prior to this just to, you know, set my mind to something. I've written down 180. But if you're going to go with 57, I'm going to go with 58, Sam.
Okay. So that means we move to P8.
Yeah, that's Tsunoda. And Tsunoda's been consistently finishing in those, P7 and down position. So I'd say there must have been a decent amount, but P8's still quite high. I'm going to go with 30.
Okay. I think that I'm going to go with 31.
All right. Which brings us to the first points for Williams on P9, Albon.
That's right. I'm going to go with 10. I don't think there's going to be a lot of people. I think if anything, people would have put him potentially at P10 as opposed to P9.
Well, I would have, if I would have had to go first, I would have gone with 1. So I'm going to go with 9.
Oh, wow. Okay.
I think not there a lot might of confidence, be some people on the P10, but I find it hard to believe people really put him on P9. But then again, yeah, what do I know?
You never know.
Let's move to Gasly. That's another one that I think must be low, but I do think that people go with a jolly joker sometimes for the P10. I don't want to make fun of Gasly. Anyway, I'm going to go with 5.
I'm going to go below you and say 4.
Interesting. All right, that leaves us with Hamilton, who took that point for fastest lap.
You know, I'm a little surprised that he was the one that secured fastest lap. But with that being said, I am going to go with 10 people.
Yeah, of course, it was basically him and Verstappen and Stroll who were on fresh tires, and Sargeant as well, I think. But yeah, interesting to see that. I was even thinking that, or I think they also even mentioned that on the commentary, that Hamilton, because Tsunoda was so far behind him, he could have made even 2 pit stops on the last 4 laps just to go on softs and try to set the fastest lap that way. But anyway, he kept his fastest lap. How many did you say? I've been talking too much.
I believe I said 10.
10. Oh, nice.
I hope that's what I said. My mind started, actually, I was just thinking as you were talking about that. I clearly my short-term memory is lacking recently, but I was, when you were talking about that, I was also thinking about the fact that why they would, he would have gone for fastest lap. I mean, they did have not a great weekend from a strategic perspective, I think, overall during the race. So maybe they wanted, you know, regaining any point possible at that point would have been valuable. So it would make sense why they would try to go for fastest lap.
Well, if you go with 10, I'd written down 10 as well. So then I'll go with 9. I'll go with 9, just below you.
I hope that's the number that I said. I'm going to have to go back and listen to this.
I think
this
you said 12. Well, maybe, yeah. Well, we can both go back. I thought you said 12. But anyway, you can
maybe still... I did. Very well, I probably did.
Okay. But we're going to go with 10 then, I guess. All right. Well, I'm going to calculate those scores now. If you can do a little bit of an intermezzo, perhaps tell a little bit about the F1 experience. What were the things that you saw over there? What excited you the most?
Yeah, so I had a really interesting weekend where I flew into Toronto for the day, strictly the day. I'm fortunate enough to reside in Montreal that it's a short, less than an hour flight. So they gave me the ability to do that, to go and see the F1 experience. And for those of you who may not be aware of what the F1 experience is, it is an event that's being hosted currently in Toronto and I believe also in Austria, where they fly in several pieces, historical artifacts, and also tell the story of F1 from the beginning all the way to where it currently is, coupled with some really interesting information, learning about the sport itself. And it was a fascinating thing to be a part of. I spent hours in there. I saw things that I probably will never have the experience to be able to see once again. They flew in one of Senna's cars, the 1987 Lotus. That was one of my peak moments, was to be able to physically be in the presence of seeing that car, along with Damon Hill's Old Faithful car was there as well. And there were a lot of other really memorable things. I saw one of the very first tickets that was ever purchased for the very first Grand Prix event. I saw a lot of really cool memorabilia artifacts. And one of the things that I thought was, I believe they have pieces of it as well at the Austria experience, is they had components of the car of Romain Grosjean's 2020 Haas car that unfortunately went up in flames. A very, very well-known moment that took place, and where he was able to walk away from it. However, I mean, the car was essentially destroyed, but it also pays, it also highlights the innovation over the period of time throughout the history of F1, because there was a lot of moments. There was a wall dedicated to a memoriam of the drivers that have passed away throughout the duration of the sport, and I thought that that was a really touching moment, but also to see where we're at now at this current stage, where those unfortunate things have also led to innovation and development, where a driver can be in an accident and be in a fire, essentially sitting in a fire for an extended period of time and be able to walk away from it. So there was a lot of really interesting things, and that was something to see, those pieces of the wreckage. And I also really enjoyed seeing a lot of tribute to Senna, who is historically one of my favorite drivers in the sport itself. And I think that was a very important thing to experience as well. I think I've said experience several times as I'm describing the F1 experience. But overall, I would highly recommend it if you are someone who has the ability or the opportunity at some point in time to be able to go to one of those events. It is one that you will not regret at all. So very happy, a little tired, but glad to be back. And I am more than anything really, really looking forward now to in 2 weeks where I get to go to the race here in Montreal. So very much looking forward to that.
Yeah, sounds like a good couple of weeks for you. I mean, sounds like a really great experience. And very nice, a nice build up to the Canadian Grand Prix, I would say. I think it's time to look at the actual scores and see how we fared. And
I'm not as excited for that, considering we all know my lovely track record. But let's go ahead.
So there were 272 people who had Leclerc on P1.
What a way to start it. Well, clearly you won the first round.
Yeah, but that's a lot of people. That's
that is a lot of people, though.
Who dare to go with something else than Verstappen just based on those two practice sessions. It's crazy to see that, but also fun, which indeed that point goes to me. We go to Piastri. And that one will go to you because I went with 30, you went with 29. There was only 20 people who had him on P2.
Okay, interesting.
Yes, and that brings us to Sainz, and there I went with 43, you went with 42. There were 71 people who had Sainz on P3, so that's a point for me. It's 2-1. And that brings us to the second McLaren, and there were 130 people who had Norris on P4. And AD is closer to 130 than 79 is, so that's another point for me.
Okay.
Yeah, you see where this is going. Anyway, let's.
You've already looked ahead. Well, thank you. Okay.
I mean, I'm so excited talking.
So
about
basically,
the
this is going to get a lot worse.
Well, let's just take them one by one. So Russell,
rip the Band-Aid off.
Yeah. Well, Russell, there were 48 people who had him on P5. So that gives me another point because I went with 28, you went with 27. Which brings us to the interesting one, Verstappen. I went with 2 and you went with 3. And that's your point because there were 5 people who had Verstappen on P6.
Okay.
More than
interesting.
Yeah. Very interesting. We then go to Hamilton and It's interesting because only 48 people had Russell on P5. There was 143 people who had Hamilton on P7. I went with 58 after you went with 57, so that brings me another point. And I think it's from sorry to say that how much it's 1, 2, 3, 4, 5. It's 5-2 at this point. With 4 questions left, so you could technically still win it. We're gonna go to Tsunoda. Actually, there we got really close. I went with 30, you went with 31. It was 28 people, so we were quite close there. Albon on P9, we were close again. You went with 10, I went with 9. It was 7 people, so we were close on that one too. So on the last two, I was only 2 places apart, and you were 3 apart. So, yeah. Which brings us to Gasly. I went with 5. You went with 4. There were still 17 people who went with Gasly on P10. It's quite a lot.
That's a considerable... Yeah, that's a considerable amount of people, but they were right.
Yeah. And then fastest lap, Hamilton. I went with 9. You went with 10. It was 28 people, so that's your point.
I already know the outcome, though. Womp
yeah,
womp.
It's 8-3. Oh boy.
Well, I normally say, better luck next time.
Yeah,
hopefully.
I guess. And Yeah, well, what else I can say? I mean, it's interesting though. I find it more fun to when there's these outliers and when there's these Verstappen on P6 and Alpine on P10 and Williams on P9. Those are actually interesting ones to guess and difficult ones, so to say. So I guess what that leaves me with saying that I hope that we get similar shakeups for Canada, not only just for this guessing game, but also like you said, because you're going to be there, it's going to be very exciting. Mm-hmm. And I hope we've seen a very interesting podium last year with three of the greatest on the podium. We saw Verstappen, Hamilton and Alonso on that podium last year.
That's right.
I hope you get to see three different people on the podium. That would be exciting. Although,
absolutely.
I mean, Hamilton and Alonso can be on the podium. I wouldn't mind that.
Well, last year, we were all able to experience it together. So that was a really great moment and also a huge highlight to see the three of them on the podium. Absolutely. Three world champions. And I think that this year, I mean, it's coming once again off the backs of the most recent races, it's really going to be exciting to be a part of it, because even if I wasn't watching the race and fortunate enough to be a part of watching it live, I would be so excited looking at the race, looking ahead, just because of the fact that you have Leclerc, who has now won his race this year. You have Norris, who's won his first race. You have Piastri, who performed really well. And you have Sainz, who's consistently doing well as well. You have these cars that have advanced with Red Bull, and you see that Red Bull is struggling as of recently. So there's so much going on and a lot to look forward to. And yeah, I can't wait to talk all about it once the race is over in 2 weeks.
Agreed, and I'm sure we will, and have a lot of fun and enjoy.